Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Couldn't
the
be
best.
Better.
Could the be. Best. You're in a good frame of mind. You've been filling out forms. You've been getting frustrated. You know, podcasts are there to ease the pain.
Yes. When nothing else works in life, there's the podcast.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why we should talk about something really happy-making and good, and that everybody's going to love, and that is ABC's The Family, right? Right?
Yeah, right. That's the fix.
It sounds totally great. I'm really looking forward to it. Have you written a review of it, perhaps?
Yeah, I really kind of dismantled that one. They're not really happy with me.
Nah.
Yeah. Not going to go to Jenna Band's Christmas party.
Mickey Mouse going to come to your house and beat you up?
I think they are. They are. And I think that they are trying to like say, hey, it did pretty good and it's really good in its first try. Aren't you wrong now? And I'm like, no. Ratings.
A lot of bad shows get good ratings.
Yeah. Ratings, not an indication of quality, my friend. That's not my part of the job. It still sucks. Yeah. It could be popular and sucks, but look at Donald Trump.
Also, the first episode's ratings don't reflect the quality of it either, because they reflect the quality of the selling job, right?
Right, exactly.
Episode 2 will tell us more about whether those people actually thought, oh yeah, I'd watch that again, or whether they're like, nope, forget it.
I know. And there's been a couple of those that both Dan and I have run into lately, but that's okay. We, you know, hey, there's times of confusion. We'll get through it.
Times of confusion.
But it's platinum age, as you notice with the Fuller House renewal.
Yeah, platinum age. Yes, we have not only The Family on ABC, but Fuller House, which I yelled at about last week, was
you
renewed
did.
for a season two.
Yeah, you were not happy about that.
A second season of low quality entertainment. Yay!
I know. I think I found a theory to this. I think that there's so much really great television and there's so many stories about that, that some people are like, you know what? Too hard. Too hard. Give me something I can just not work. My brain will not work on.
Surely there's something better than Fuller House, though. Surely.
It's true. But I don't get it. You know what, though? Look, let's just put this down to nostalgia probably drove some ratings. And maybe there's something in the deal contractually, maybe someone on Netflix worldwide, maybe someone in, I don't know, Malaysia thinks it's really funny. I don't know. And so it works for them. Maybe the numbers work for them. Or maybe that it's not getting any ratings, but they're to keep up the facade of success. They're like, yeah, we renewed Fuller House. Absolutely.
The throwing good money after bad.
Business philosophy.
It seems unlikely.
It does seem unlikely. You know what's more accurate is someone in Malaysia is laughing their ass off.
It could be. It could be. We have a letter about Netflix and Amazon international expansions that we'll get to later that I think hits on that point too.
That is crazy.
I think we've got a letter about your review of Family, by the way, too. The Family. Well, so is there more to say about The Family other than this drama with Joan Allen and you think it's terrible and ABC is mad at you?
Yeah, it's just so bad. I mean, it doesn't work at all. It's one of those things. It's just a public service announcement not to watch. And, you know, people have wanted to watch shows I've panned before because there's been, you know, parts of it that are so funny you want to watch it. And then there's sometimes we turn on into something like Agent X, which is like, wow, I think this is goofy, crazy bad. And then it turns out to be fun to watch. But this is not like that at all. They're not having any fun like they were on Agent X. Agent X people had a lot of fun making that show. They're not having any fun on The Family.
I am sad to see that our friend Matt Saracen, Zach Guilford, is in this as the drunk son. Is that right?
He's the drunk son.
Don't disappoint me, Matt Saracen. You have a bright future career as a former high school quarterback ahead of you. I can't. There are some characters that it's very hard. We were talking about like how, you know, Omar is in a show, right? You just can't, you know, Bunk's in a show.
Yeah.
It's not just Wire characters, but right. It's you've got those people who are always indelibly those characters. But the downside of that is that every now and then you're like, I don't know if I really want to see that person who played that character I really liked on a bad show playing
a drunk.
In case a drunk. Yeah.
Come on, Matt.
Maybe I don't want to see it. Get it together, Matt. Do I have to have coach? Do I have to coach and Mrs. Coach come over to your house and scare you straight?
Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah, it's pretty scary. You know, they all have to have work. That's what I say. You know, like, I can't understand how Joan Allen took this job. I mean, I don't know why she did that. I mean, this thing is so ridiculous. My favorite part of it, by the way, is the whole lesbian lifestyle blogger.
I was going to mention that phrase came up in your review that made me laugh.
It is, without a doubt, it was the funniest thing because it was the worst... It was one of the worst representations of a newsroom, right when we were coming off the spotlight high, then we segue into all the papers in the Bay Area being combined into one, yeah. Basically.
A weekly supplement.
But then this representation of it was, it's like being a doctor's office, basically. It's like that kind of office. Mm. And everybody is like total cliche. But my favorite part was when they said, there's a super hot woman who's wearing shorts in the office, which I had to pause the show and then double over at. And then they said, who are you? And she's like, I write the lesbian lifestyle blog. And it turns out, apparently, because I only got two episodes, apparently, she is a lesbian, but she sleeps with Matt Saracen.
Huh.
So I'm not sure there's many lesbians
who would
do that.
Maybe that's part of the lifestyle.
That's just her different interpretation of the lesbian lifestyle. Oh my God, it's too funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a series of successions of those kind of things that are not nearly as funny as that moment. And you're like, oh, okay, I don't have enough hours in my life to do that. And I watched two episodes. I took the bullet just in case the second one took off and was genius. It was not genius.
Mm-hmm. There's a review.
There it is. That's
not done. Genius.
Not genius.
If you're checking for genius, look elsewhere. All right. Well, the family, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah. People can read that review. It'll be in the show notes. You can have a chuckle and don't watch it.
Wait, don't watch
it. That is the written equivalent of you standing somewhere, sort of waving your arms and just sort of like go elsewhere, just waving it off. Like,
nothing
nope,
to see
not here.
Here.
Not here. Another, go somewhere else. Not
Move
here.
Move along, people.
Mm-hmm. Abandon hope, all ye who enter.
Yeah.
Here.
Do not rubberneck.
Hey, you and Dan Feinberg did a couple of fun, this is really one of the nice things about having two staff critics at the Hollywood Reporter is you guys have the ability to do these little back and forths where sometimes it's a kind of a debate and I think they call it the critics debate, but a lot of time it strikes me, maybe this is a little too insidery, as also that you guys get to pool your knowledge and only have to sort of do half of the work, which I think is brilliant.
A little bit of that. In the case of the last two things that we did, I mean, yeah, we actually pool our knowledge in the sense that we're writing it together, basically, yeah. But we do have to still watch all the
Yeah, you did all you did both have to watch a bunch of late night TV, but they were both really good. I enjoyed reading both of them. You did a piece about late night hosts and in the context of elections, and there are so many late night hosts.
Wow. Yeah.
So, throwing in Samantha Bee with John Oliver, and then you can go to the Comedy Central with Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah. Mm-hmm.
And with Larry Wilmore, and you got your Corden and your Fallon and your Kimmel and your Colbert. There's just is so much.
Yeah, and Myers. Yeah,
and so that's the thing that really struck me about it is that you guys really said Seth Meyers has really elevated his game here.
Yeah, that was I loved it. We had previously, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, we did the Vice one prior to that, and this was a long process because we knew. When they first pitched this idea that we should go back and forth about how are late night hosts and shows covering politics, I made a point of telling the assigning editor, like, okay, this is a good idea, but not if you want it tomorrow. I mean, we really have to have a couple of weeks of digging into these shows because there's so many of them. We have to watch all these shows. And then, so yeah, it was kind of a, you know, a 2-week sampler period, I guess, of it. And then also going back and looking at old clips and stuff that's online that you might have missed. Because I had to definitely do that for the Daily Show. But yeah, I thought it was super revelatory in the sense that Seth Meyers, who was... he was probably not my least favorite, but he didn't pop for me like Corden did. And, you know, none of those things really did a good job for me. And, but when I went back and saw this, you know, they've moved him from kind of coming out to do stand up and they put him behind the desk where he belongs, like a Weekend Update. And Dan pointed that out. That was already a good improvement. But now with the political stuff, Seth Meyers is killing it. He is so good. I would highly recommend anybody who didn't really like him or gave up on him to go that and go there and watch that show. And you know what? I think it's contagious. Like, he's just better at doing interviews now. He has more fun. He's intuitive with the guests in a way that it's kind of funny. Like, he can either he can share stories. Like when you know, he had Kerry Russell on from The Americans, and Kerry Russell's pregnant, and Seth Meyers' wife's pregnant, and they did this very funny back and forth. And then he had the women from Broad City on, and they did a great job together. That was the same episode, actually. They did a great job together on that interview, and I thought, wow, he's getting a lot better. But yeah, as far as the political out stuff, home run for him. He and Samantha Bee, I think, were the big surprises.
Yeah, I've heard so many great things about Samantha Bee's stuff too. So
yeah,
it's interesting too that you've got this question about like, whether the 11:30 shows, you know, they need to do it, but whether there is a concern of getting like too much into the politics stuff, and if they're not kind of pulling back from it, even Colbert, it's not like they don't talk about it, but it's also not front and center every night.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the issues that both Dan and I had about these the situation. It's like the only one who's I mean Meyers is the only one who's really involved in it. So if you're looking at Kimmel, who does jokes, but they're surface jokes, and I think he would love to make a couple of Donald Trump jokes or whatever, or Ben Carson jokes. But if you think about it, Corden's not that interested in it. Fallon's not that interested in it. Kimmel's not that interested in it. And so, and then you would think, you know, Seth Meyers was the surprise, but you would think obviously the Colbert would be doing it, but yeah, he's caught up in this thing, Jason, where I think he's got a show to do. And I think CBS is like, yeah, we love you for your politics and you were really political when you first started, but here we are now really in the thick of the election thing. And I would think there'd be more Colbert stuff to do. And he does do a little bit of it, but he seems on some nights to be very happy to just transition to his guests or a funny bit, like he did this whole thing with the Fuller House people. So yeah, I kind of want more. The Trevor Noah Daily Show deep dive that I did, I mean, if you read it, and people will read it if it's linked there, it really frustrating with him. I mean, I've just had it. And, you know, Dan likes him a lot more than I did. And as I noted, I think the guy is not funny at all. I don't think he's – and I watched a lot of stuff. Not funny at all. And more hurtful, I think, if you're a big Jon Stewart fan. He's not insightful. And it's because he doesn't have a dog in the – you know, he doesn't have a dog in the fight. This is not his country.
Yeah,
so.
I thought that was a really interesting debate about is one of the issues. Like, Trevor Noah is not an American, so you can take that and say, I don't know what you people are doing,
right?
Kind of thing.
Right.
I almost like I wash my hands of this. I don't understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Or you can be. Engaged like John Oliver, right? Who, you know, he is a British citizen, but he's married to an American. He lives in the United States. I think he has no plans of ever leaving. And he gets, you know, and with his show, you get the feeling like he doesn't want everything he does to be about the election because that is going to go on too long. But even he did his lengthy Donald Trump piece last week. And, you know, and when he does it, he gets outraged and irate and feels like he has a stake in it. And I agree with you. I mean, I have not been thrilled with Trevor Noah. Every time I've seen him, he's sort of not impressed me. Mm-hmm. But I think you might have put a pin in it a little bit, put your finger on it, that he's got a remove that does not come across as this kind of like cool, ironic remove. It's more like a I don't care yeah. about what is happening. I'm just going to read some jokes, but almost detached a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that there's not that with John Oliver, who do want the outrage, because now is the time to actually be outraged, because what we're witnessing is unbelievable, and so you can't be a political commentator and not kind of be like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I mean John Stewart must be at home just unable to sleep, fidgeting, wishing he just could do anything. Maybe he's pouring it all into a podcast or something. I don't know what he's doing, but you know, at least John is John Oliver is able to get it out, whereas Trevor Noah is like, yeah. And then he makes kind of like cute jokes or like, isn't that silly? And I'm like, oh, this is not working for me at all, dude. Not at all.
All the Trevor Noah fans will come out of the woodwork now.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, who knows? But I gave him a chance, and it's not that it's a generational thing. It's just, he's just not funny. And that the killer part of it is like, when you see the twists and turns that Samantha Bee and John Oliver do to make their points. I mean, their staffs are obviously doing lots of research to say, oh, as a matter of fact, you did, just even beyond saying, as a matter of fact, you said this 2 years ago. They keep doing it, and they make five or six different points come together into a bigger issue, which takes time. It takes effort, and I don't think The Daily Show is putting that effort in. But I do think that Seth Meyers and his staff are doing it. They're making very good points about this on a nightly basis, which is a little bit harder. They don't have to do 20 minutes. He does about 10 on it, but all told. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good work being done in late night, but it's not being done on The Daily Show. And as I added as an aside, that, you know, the nightly show with Larry Wilmore was never meant to be political. It was more social. It's got about race and class and weird stuff. You know, it's more so more sociology than it is politics. But he got into it a little bit. He's not doing as much as I wish he was doing, but he had a really mature and I think thoughtful take on it on Trump. And I think we need more of that in late night. But I'm not sure they're going to do it.
Anyway, it's in the show notes. You guys did a good job. It was a really, really nice recap, and it makes me want to go check out Samantha Bee and Seth Meyers, honestly.
Yeah, and I have to say, to prepare yourself for Samantha Bee, because like, I don't know how she catches her breath. I mean, they have ads in there. You know, as Dan pointed out, it's more like 20 minutes where there's no ads in John Oliver, so it's more like 30 minutes, his sort of filibuster. So she's doing 20 to 22 minutes, but she doesn't take a breath. Mm. I mean, she really brings it. She brings the fastball, bringing the high heat. Mm. the first four of her shows that she's been bringing the high heat. So it's pretty impressive.
Cool. What about your other piece? It was about Viceland. We've touched on this a couple of times. This is Vice getting into TV even further with these six original shows.
Yeah, and I think the short, you know, we people can read the link and decide if they want to do it. I would say the short takeaway from me is there were a couple series on there that I thought I wouldn't like that ended up being pretty interesting. I mean,
you liked their cooking show, and I've got my pen out ready to check the box when you tell us the name of that show.
Yes, that show is called Fuck, That's Delicious. But of course, check. it's that's such a Vice thing to say, right? Yep. And another one of their shows is called Balls Deep.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, Vice, I get it.
We see what you're doing there.
We see what you're doing there, you clever little guys. You're not Bravo. 60 Minutes. I get it. And that one didn't work for me at all. But the Fuck That's Delicious thing where they have got Action Bronson, the rapper, who is not my cup of tea as far as the rap world goes. His group of people who are with him are very interesting. They're all disparate rappers on their own, but he's got them on this thing. And he's not really a full-on foodie, but it kind of worked. I wouldn't watch it every time. It kind of worked. But the one show that kind of stuck out to me is really interesting, and I think they'll put it up online. I would actually recommend people going to take a look at it. There is a series called Weedekit, like etiquette for but for pot. And you know, I want to see more episodes. Dan and I both agreed that we need to see more episodes. Like, wow, are you gonna go this in depth for every episode, and can you find issues? And I think you can, because our good friend Question Boy, aka Joe Garofoli, when he was, before he just transitioned back to the political team at the Chronicle, he was really covering a lot of pot issues, so marijuana issues that are in California and beyond, and doing a great job of it. Yeah. So he was able to get a number of interesting stories out of that. So I think that Weedakit can do the same thing. But their first one was about, you know, high potency THC and how it treats cancer in kids. And it's, I gotta say, it was really fascinating. It was, because there was a lot of questions about, like, it is helping break these things down, but it's, because it's a class one federal drug, they're not going to let you do these double blind studies that'll actually get it moved to the next level. So parents are having to guess whether it actually helps cure cancer or not, or reduce it. But they found families where it did, and they had really good evidence from doctors, including one of the more famous doctors who worked on both the AIDS. He actually named the HIV virus from San Francisco, and is now working in this level, this how pot is affecting cancer patients. And so there's a really good episode where I think, like, wow, I couldn't have found that like many other places. So in that sense, I think Viceland as a little mini network will work. But other stuff, I was just like, okay, yeah, that's, I can't do that. That's the problem. You can't reinvent the wheel. You know, we talk about there being like 2,000 shows on the air, and the good portion of those are unscripted. So pretty much, if you were to flip the dial around, Jason, as you know, like if you were to have like a DirecTV package like mine and just sit there all night and just go to one channel to the next channel, you would probably cover every spectrum of any idea that anyone could ever come up with. That's here's some science, here's a computer show, here's homemaking. It's all there. It's hard to come up with new ideas. So I wish them well, but at least on a couple of instances, they turned out something that was kind of entertaining. But I don't think it's going to be, neither Dan or I really came with the conclusion like, yeah, we'll watch this every week.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's, I think you got to get past the stunt aspect of this, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like that with a lot of Vice stuff, because Vice does a lot of actually good stuff. But the attitude is, I just see it as this. I mean, some of it is attitude in the content, but a lot of it is just kind of artifice. It's just there because that's part of their branding, to be edgy and, we're not going by the normal rules. We're going to be different. But,
yeah,
in the end, they do, they do some interesting stuff. You just got to kind of get past that. For me, it's the eye rolling of like, yes, you're edgy.
Yes, exactly. You're making a really good point, because the point, I like what they're basically doing is they're making a very personal brand of 60 Minutes, so to speak, or like it's a point of view documentary. That's their whole thing. The thing that drives me a little crazy is when they're doing their news stuff is when they're like, no one's ever done this before. Well, yeah, actually, the New York Times has been doing this for 20 years. They've been covering, the Middle East, and they've gone everywhere. And if you were to read all of their stories, you would have found that out. But you're basically just going to go there and say, we're on the border of, and tensions are so high in Pakistan. And yeah, okay, well, that's been written somewhere, but you're just doing it in a different way. And I'm interested in how you're doing it, but don't say no one else did it. That's the part that gets me. So, I mean, there's stuff on these Viceland channels that I think might be out there. The other one, just briefly to talk about, was the Gaycation one with Ellen Page, the actress who's been in a bunch of great movies. And, she's finally came out. And so they're going to go around and discover different cultures as you travel and how open they are to LGBTQ issues and stuff. So that was kind of interesting. They went to Japan, and I found that whole thing kind of enlightening almost by accident in the end. It's a show you probably don't see everywhere, so why not?
Anything else going on? I mean, that was, I've plumbed your links on the Hollywood Reporter for this last week. We already went into sort of like what's coming in March. We did get one letter that that I hope I'm not just totally, I think I didn't put in my little list of letters here, but one person did complain that, how can March be a bad month for TV if The Americans is coming back? And I thought that was a fair point.
That is true. And there are other, you know, I was just trying to spew all of that out as some kind of like, you know, because there's so much stuff out there. But yeah, I think Dan and I were laughing that, like, you know, he's been wrapped up doing some crazy stuff as well. He had to do House of Cards, which is, I think, a series that's really kind of played out now. Mm-hmm. And my next one that I'm working on right now, which is I'm laughing about, is Of Kings and Prophets, which is, oh boy. Yeah, it's going to be like kind of the family situation. But at the same time, I think it shows, like, obviously The Americans, I'm super excited about that. And I think Flaked, that Dan's going to do for Netflix, which has Mitch Hurwitz coming back to do a series after Arrested Development. And you know, there's a couple that are mixed in there. So it can't be that bad.
Oh, Of Kings and Prophets is coming up in the next week. It's just people can look forward to that next Tuesday on ABC. So they're already angry at you. So, you know, just might as well double down.
Oh, I'll be doubling down.
And this is one of those. Is this one of those like we're going to putting Bible stories on TV pays kind of
calculations
that they made here?
I think they're trying to do Bible stories with the twist of, like, you know, that Bible story wasn't as interesting as it read, so let's twist it a little bit. Let's put a little soap into it. Yeah, it's a very bad concoction. And it's a lot of Brits doing accents, but it's also like, oh, you guys, this is basically like Scandal with swords and sandals.
Huh.
Because it's on ABC.
Yeah, I have to say the history of this project does not fill anybody with confidence either. This was it's kind of come out in the fall, and then they're like, well, we had some issues. It'll be mid-season.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Maybe maybe it'll be the next Fuller House and get renewed.
So
who knows?
With some new people and new management at ABC now. I know that it's some of the same people who were there before, but does that change their approach to something like this? Does that happen sometimes? I think it does, where they look at something that was brought in by the previous regime and are like, well, I guess that didn't work, and it's like much easier for them. They don't have as much ego invested in it to just get it off the air if it's a flop.
Yeah, normally that's true. Yeah, especially because now we're heading into, as you know, I think some people might remember, we're heading into some serious decision making about next season. They need to get a lot of this done by April so that when they go into the upfronts in May, when they go to New York and present their quote unquote their new fall shows, they need to pick which fall shows they're going to have space for. So, but you know, since you brought that up, I will say that two things that are weird on the ABC side are. The woman who ran drama is now running the network. So, mm-hmm. you know, she did of Kings and Prophets.
Yeah.
And she did The Family.
Yeah.
And, you know, she renewed a bunch of series. And I made a snarky comment. I said on Twitter, I said, breaking, ABC renews most of the shows that recently fired president created. Yeah. So like she's basically renewing everything that the guy who got fired put on the air.
We should say they renewed 15 shows,
mm-hmm.
including, you know, Grey's Anatomy and Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder, Once Upon a Time, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Nobody's excited about it, but it won't go away.
Right.
Fresh Off the Boat, mm-hmm. Goldberg's Modern Family, Black-ish, The Middle, Dancing with the Stars, The Bachelor, Shark Tank, America's Funniest Home Videos, That'll Never Die. And of course, my favorite, the show that they ran a promo for during the Oscars and made us all laugh out loud at how bad it looked. Quantico. My wife turned to me and said, no, that's a real show. and I said, yeah, it is. That's a real show.
Other people were like, is that still on? And it's doing well for them, too.
It is.
It's doing well for them.
And it's coming back.
Well, and here's the thing, the main ones that they didn't announce yet, which they still could, right, is Agent Carter, which we still have to figure out whether that's going to come back or not. American Crime, which I think is going to come back, although they didn't announce it. And they didn't they didn't make a decision on Nashville and a couple of others, which they probably will kill, I think. But, you know, I was having it out with playfully on Twitter with our Leslie Goldberg, who does all the deep dives, you know, she's the reporter who breaks all the news. And she's like, well, why wouldn't they? They're not. This is a bad sign. I'm like, well, it's not really a bad sign. I mean, you can break these things out. You don't have to do one day where you announce that you did, you know, 25 shows returning. Everything gets lost in the news. Maybe there's other factors that they couldn't sign off on yet, and they'll make the announcement soon, I think. But then she said, and this is a good point, because you and I talked about this last week, like, okay, so is it the new woman who took over making the decisions, or is it the guy?
Yeah.
Above her, who ousted the last president, who's really making the decisions behind the curtain, mm-hmm. and that we don't know. So, who? Because I would think that American Crime would be a slam dunk, because it's the only series that ABC has where you could actually say you're in the Emmy competition right now. Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with all the rest of it. I'm kind of surprised by. Like Dr. Ken, which, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Which right. has done pretty well in ratings, but it hasn't been picked up. The Muppets, which I will say, I know that the ratings have still been problematic for it, but I think it's gotten a lot better since they basically parted ways with one of the showrunners and changed the tone. I think it's a lot better now, but I think they maybe squandered all their goodwill too soon. It'll be interesting to see what they do, but, you know. I guess we'll find out. We're entering that season now, the renewals and the upfront rumors and all of those decisions that have to be made about, do you want more of this or do you want to let it go?
Exactly. And so it's funny too, after all kind of getting into this back and forth here. And here's the thing. And I think that for most of our listeners will probably be true. And certainly for you, I think is that at the end of the day, I was like, oh, right. These are all about network shows that I don't really care whether they come or go. You know, I can't imagine there's a show other than some comedies that I would be really upset about on a network. Well, like, American Crime's great, but if it doesn't come back, it doesn't come back. That's just one less thing I have to.
No, like Fresh Off the Boat and Black-ish maybe. And, you know, there's some.
Sure. Those ones, I think we would all be like, oh, I kind of like that. That was good. But for the most part, I don't know.
You're not excited about Quantico coming.
Yeah, like, right? It's not going to really impact your life or my life.
No.
The one thing I will say, because it just came out today, and we can now that we have our worldwide simultaneous release of news, is that people who have not yet checked out FX and The People versus O.J. Simpson, which I highly recommend that they do. It can be kind of polarizing, but it is very interesting. I know you said you're not going to do it. You're ready to live through it. But Saturday, so tomorrow, basically, they are doing the first 5 episodes to catch everybody up, and they're all going to be commercial free.
Hmm.
So, boy, that's a good way to DVR it all and then decide if you're going to do it. Or, you know, if you have insomnia like I do, you might as well stay up and watch it all. But that's 10 p.m. Eastern time. So for us, like 7 o'clock on the West Coast, set the DVR. First 5 episodes commercial free on FX. I think that, you know, that's a show that I think you can watch and then have ongoing opinions about and not feel like you wasted an hour, even if you didn't like one of the episodes. I think that that's a cultural television series that we can all talk about, whereas Quantico's not.
All right. Do you want to, anything else going on, or should we go to the letters?
There's nothing else going on.
Nothing else note. Going. We've done it. We beat it up. All right. Let's do some letters.
Okay. Let's do that.
First we have Dean, in the 707 update.
Still traveling.
He's in the 662. That is Mississippi. Ooh. Watching in the heat of the night. Says it couldn't be worse than Super Tuesday, and the Warriors weren't an option. So thank you to Dean in the 707. He continues to travel. Ian in the +11.
Oh,
that
another
is
international friend.
Sapporo, Japan.
Oh.
Ian says, mm-hmm. You guys are talking about exclusive content and the whys and whys not. This is the letter that I foreshadowed earlier. I have a theory that one reason it's picking up is that Netflix and Amazon are pushing into new markets. As you may have read, Netflix doubled its number of countries at the end of last year. Amazon just started streaming here as well. Hulu's been here about a year. There's less content than the States, but that content's very important. Some shows are across all platforms, But Hulu is exclusively carrying HBO shows here. Netflix has locked up AMC, except for The Walking Dead. In fact, they're releasing Better Call Saul weekly as a featured show. Of course, native language fear is very important to their strategy, but Hulu and Netflix had no brand recognition in the country, and the technology was intimidating. So blockbuster shows are crucial to their strategy. Amazon would seem to have a big advantage with its brand, but they have so few shows. Anyway, it's not just Japan, but these companies are making an aggressive push around the world, and American shows are quite valuable. Sadly, many people here still consider Full House a favorite show. So there's your theory about people. Maybe the people really love Fuller House in Japan.
Yeah. So maybe it wasn't just Malaysia.
Not just Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I thought that was I think that's a perfectly good theory from Ian about that this isn't just about the U.S. market, but it's about this international push where they, you know, they have to make new content deals for a lot of stuff, but they can bring their originals with them.
Right. And I think that goes back, I mean, way back to when Netflix did Marco Polo, another one of those savage reviews that they had to pull me off of it at the end. and, you know, like you talk to the Netflix guys and they're like, yeah, no one really liked Marco Polo. No, they weren't crying about it. They just were like, hey, it works for us, because they need international stars. They need international accents. They need a show that is, it doesn't play well in maybe in critics in the United States who are now in platinum age and everything's got to be 10 stars. They're like, hey, this will go on a lot of plates internationally. So they were happy with Marco Polo.
They had to pull you off. I like that idea. Like the show is bloodied and they're like, that's enough.
That's enough.
One more
punch
and you'll kill him. Savage review. It's a Crowded House line. Crowded House's songs were made for you. There's the TV page and Don't Dream It's Over and the Savage review. It's really Neil Finn is thinking of you when he writes those songs.
I know, right? And yes, I continue to be huge fans of theirs moving forward. I mean, they're broken up, but Neil Finn, he's still recording.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
In his basement in New Zealand somewhere.
Somewhere, yes.
All right, so let's go to Alan in the 660.
Mm-hmm.
You need me to look that up for you?
No, I just know it's dangerously close to 666.
It is, and it's in Missouri.
Okay.
Alan says, no taking Jason to task this week. Thank you. People beat up on me a little bit last week. Although I'm going to slightly disagree with Tim. Uh-oh,
here we go.
And ask Jason for clarification on something. Okay, interesting take, Alan. Nice try. Let's see if this one works. First, Tim said there was nothing he would change about Breaking Bad before kind of contradicting himself. There's definitely one thing I would change, which is the whole deal with the berries and poisoning the kid. I just think that was way too much of a triple bank shot ridiculous gambit that seemed to come out of some much more ludicrous show. I still consider Breaking Bad my number one hour-long drama of all time, displacing my previous number one, 6 Feet Under. But that plot line was a misstep, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
Well, he brings up a good point, because that one did alienate a lot of people. It didn't bother me as much as others at the time. I remember thinking, oh God, really, with the berries again? Let's move past this. I mean, it took a lot, and there was stuff that happened off camera, and that's always troublesome. Because you're having to say, could he have done this? Because they didn't sure really show us all of that. That was a little troubling. But I don't know if I would have changed it. You know, I don't know. Because then you start. It's like pulling apart a computer or something. You're like, yeah, could they have got to the boy in peril? Use that if they didn't have a way to like not quite kill him. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe you'd have to take that entire storyline out, and I was fine with it.
Then he goes on to say, Jason, I was wondering why you put Gene Roddenberry with George Lucas and Chris Carter. I'm not necessarily taking exception. I'm just curious. What did Roddenberry later do that showed he did not understand the appeal of his own creation? Do you just mean the original movie? I thought that show he did starring Kevin Sorbo was good at first before becoming completely ridiculous, but my understanding was that the good part was under Roddenberry, Alan in the 660. So, Alan, I can answer that question. Basically the story is Star Trek the Motion Picture is the studio basically gave him carte blanche to do whatever, and he said, what if I make a movie that's really slow and free of drama? We did a whole episode of The Incomparable about bad Star Trek movies a few weeks ago. You can listen to that and hear me go on. But like, you know, he decided that his utopian vision of humanity in the future was really what was more important than like character drama. And the first few seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation also show that. And then he got sick and had to step away. and they brought in other producers who stepped up and introduced drama. And that's actually when Next Generation got good. Deep Space Nine would have never happened without him, or without him gone. He there's no way he would have allowed a show with that much conflict. And the movie series, they took it away from him. And Star Trek II was not a movie Gene Roddenberry would have made. So I think there's plenty of evidence there that he, you know, was one of these people who created something that surpassed his own capability to shepherd it. And he thought it was about something that it was, that was not really why it appealed to people. And as for Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, the science fiction show you're referencing there, starring Kevin Sorbo, TV's Hercules, right?
Yes.
That was actually based on an outline that he did, but that show aired after he died. And so it was a totally different group of people, including some Deep Space Nine producers, actually, who made that show. And I agree with you. It actually was kind of way better than it should have been, at least at first. But Gene Roddenberry had nothing to do with it beyond his name being in the title, and that it was a concept that he had written, like an outline or a pilot, for like years before, and that it was unproduced. So it was kind of a cash grab from the Roddenberry family. But anyway, also, I don't know.
I'm impressed by all of that knowledge, which was a little bit like you speaking in Latin.
It's scary, knowledge there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kevin, some Kevin Sorbo knowledge there. I got the nerdy sci-fi knowledge down.
You really do.
Anyway, the Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's son Rod was, and another person from Roddenberry Entertainment Incorporated were named this week. Were announced as executive producers on the new Star Trek series, and I thought that was kind of an interesting, like maybe a reach out to the fans kind of thing. And then I heard from somebody in the know who said, no, actually that's contractual. one of the things that Roddenberry made in his deal with Paramount was that some executives from Roddenberry Entertainment had to be involved, as had to get an executive producer credit on any future Star Trek series. So yeah, okay, might as well make some good PR out of it while you're at it. But
nice.
I'm skeptical about whether Rod Roddenberry will be in the writer's room, but you know, anyway,
I'm just transfixed by the idea of being called Rod Roddenberry.
I know. Well, his name is Eugene Roddenberry, right? And I think when everybody knows who Gene Roddenberry is, you don't want to be Gene Roddenberry. You want to be your own person. So he goes by Rod, apparently.
I am Rod Roddenberry, you know. Porn star.
He could be.
Yeah.
But it would probably, phasers would be involved. Anyway, I apologize to Rod Roddenberry. So yeah, let's move on to Chris. Chris is in the 206.
Okay.
You know, that's Seattle.
That's, I knew that one.
That's
actually
solid,
I got that,
that's
one.
That's solid Seattle area. Mm-hmm. I just finished watching the Excellent Triumph Comic Insult Dog election special. Mm-hmm. I have a technical question about shows like this. Do they have to get signed releases for all of those people who appear in the interview segments? How does that work for shows that aren't news shows, things like Triumph?
They only blurred two faces out, so that tells me that they did have to get... that was a good one. That was actually a talk of a lot of people at the time. Like, he apparently didn't need to get it. I think because it's in a public place that where there was probably posted signs already for the politicians showing up there. So there were a lot of theories about it. Or, you know, they may have put their own ones up, basically saying, if you come in and sit in this restaurant, you've given up your right to... So, but they didn't have to get individual ones of consent, because made a lot of people look stupid. So I don't think those would have... people would have signed off on it. So it was interesting. I don't know. That is a question I do not have a good answer for, but I will say it was something that people thought about.
We're not lawyers.
No.
But you're right. I think something to do with a public place and something posted.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe involved.
Yeah. Okay. Then you see those. I mean, I've been there.
Lawyers, write in and tell us that's not a thing.
Yeah, right, not a thing. That can't cover that. That'd be awesome. But there really were only two faces, and it was two women.
Yeah. Hunter in the 603. That's New Hampshire.
Okay, I was going to say that one I don't know, because I know the 660, and then I think there was a 663 or 636. Hmm. But okay, New Hampshire. All right.
It's home of,
by the way, this is what I just learned, home of Seth Meyers.
Oh, interesting.
Birthplace of Seth Meyers.
All right. My uncle lived in New Hampshire for a short time.
Hmm.
So I've been to New Hampshire.
Yeah. My dad was from Rhode Island. That's all I know about that area out there.
Interesting. I have some friends who live in Rhode Island. It's very small there. You can just drive from state to state. It's kind of hilarious. We in California, it's like drive from state to state. That's crazy talk.
My first time doing that in being back there in a car, I was like, wait, we just went through like five states. Yeah. How did that even happen? That's crazy.
My first time on the East Coast, we drove through Delaware. And I was like, what do you mean we drove through Delaware? Are we out of it? And they're like, oh, yeah, we went right through it. I'm like, how is that possible?
Yeah, it's like by the time you go from San Francisco to San Jose, you could be in through like five states on the East Coast.
They're that small. They're that tiny. All right, Hunter in the 603 in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. It's hard to express just how much I enjoyed Tim's review of The Family. You displayed such gusto in trashing what seemed like melodramatically exploitative garbage from the moment I saw the first commercial. Tim, as a professional critic, do you derive more pleasure from creatively bashing something that deserves your scorn, or would you rather be able to expansively praise something that is worthy? It's hard to believe that the two are equal for you, given that when something is bad enough that you can really tear into it, you really pull out the great metaphors, Miley Cyrus, as though you've been saving them for just the right occasion.
I wasn't actually saving any of those, but I was actually pleased with the Milo Cyrus, Margaret Thatcher combination. That just came right out of the brain right when I was typing it. But no, I those are, well, I've said this before, I much prefer doing positive ones because you can get into while they're great. I mean, I teach a class on like great television, and to me, I'm always fascinated by what they did both, you know, with the camera and then with the writing and with the acting to make it all come together and then, more importantly, sustain it over a full season. But you can also get super, super mad at, like, how could you make a show like this in 2016? That's usually what it comes down to for me. And thank God I didn't have to do Fuller House because the whole nostalgia thing is troubling. But no, the hardest reviews are the ones where you're like, meh. You know, and now I get a little bit more, the meh stuff makes me a little bit more angry because it used to be like, I don't know, like, do you have an extra hour? Then you could watch this and you might like it and it might be unoffensive and you might shrug your shoulders and say, well, it wasn't great, but it didn't annoy me. And now I kind of sense like, why would you make a meh show in 2016? Like, the competition is so incredibly fierce. Like, I would rather you fail spectacularly than just like, oh, that was decent. I don't know. Right. Although this is from somebody who, honest to God, so I'm already a night owl. So, and then I have insomnia. So like, I don't even start getting tired anyway until tired, quote unquote, till about 1:30. And then if it kicks in, which it normally does, then I'm stuck. So last night, I enjoyed the hell out of watching a bunch of Elementary episodes, and I was laughing. I'm like, oh boy, this is, look at all these guest stars, and I was guessing plots. It was very fun. It was very fun.
See, you know, the human brain is very powerful and complicated. So you got room in there for ripping something, for appreciating something, and for watching something like Elementary. That's all. You got room in there.
And I actually was smiling because it was like 2:30 and I still wasn't tired. And I was like, you know what? I could technically slip another Blacklist in here. So I was like, wow, if I was actually typing this out in Twitter, people would be like, what are you doing?
It's like your time is your own all of a sudden at 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You can watch nobody's going to stop you from watching the Blacklist at 2 in the morning.
I want to find out what's going on with Liz.
Yeah, sure. Why not? This is a good one. This is from Shilpa in the +44, so across the pond.
Yeah,
UK code. We know that.
Nice.
And I've got the answer for her question. So here we go. Her, okay. Him? I'm not sure. Sorry. I thought it was a her, but now I don't know. So apologies to Shilpa. I'll just say for Shilpa. The question is about One Child. Do you know anything about the program? And since this is from the +44, it's MME. One Child. I see that it was filmed in 2014, but it's only been broadcast in the UK now. Was it broadcast on Sundance? It says it's a Sundance production. It's a fascinating show with a fantastic cast. It seems like it should be more well known. Now, before Tim answers, I will point you to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at theincomparable.com/TVTM/73. And you will find there a link to December 2014, the review of One Child by Tim.
By Mr. Tim Goodman.
It was not a positive review.
Although they didn't have to pull me off of it.
No.
Let's put it that way. I mean, just if you want to say it, I was more like, this is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I struggled with that one.
So you can read it if you would like to know what Tim thought of it. It's good that you like it, but you referred to it as plotting.
Yes.
Not plotting. Plotting.
With D's. D's instead of T's.
With D's.
But, you know, I on the in the plus column, I will reiterate that since we made a thing. You didn't have to pull me off of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't killing it. I was just saying no.
That's fine.
I wished it was better.
You didn't have to pull me off of it. That's the statement he gave to authorities. Okay. We're going to move on to Peter from the 617, but he'll always be 920 by heart. 920, of course, Wisconsin.
Wow. So I did not know that.
But now in Mass. 617, okay. Massachusetts.
Yeah. And not his first letter, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. Okay. He says, hey, guys, after hearing Tim talk about how he sees Breaking Bad as a perfect show, it got me thinking about it as well. What I think made the show so great is it trusted the viewers to be smart watchers. As you progress through the show, Jesse and Walt don't continue to make the same mistakes or moves over and over again. They learn from their errors, and you even see that knowledge put to use later in the show, where in contrast, watching The Walking Dead, they never seem to learn, and characters make stupid moves just for cheap suspense. You would think by this point they would understand this took a turn. They would understand the rules of this new world and stop making those errors. Glenn's death, in quotes, was a great example of this, and now with this week's cliffhanger, it seems like they're just getting themselves in a governor mess all over again. Why don't shows trust that viewers are smart enough to want progression with their characters and not just the low-hanging suspense fruit? If I wanted that, I would just tune into Chicago Deli. Hey!
Hey,
thanks for the great podcast. You've always had some joy to my weekend. Peter from the 617.
Nice. Chicago Deli.
Yeah. So, you know, learning from your mistakes. I think, isn't this a little bit like saying, why do bands not play, just play the hits? I mean, there is that, like, maybe more people like, you know, just the fact that The Walking Dead always behaves the same way. And it's a little more challenging to do something like Breaking Bad, where it changes and grows over time.
Yeah. And I think that some shows learn from outrage, actually. I think some shows, I mean, you can look at Lost. The backlash of adding those two pointlessly ridiculous characters in the third season or second season?
Nikki
second
and Paolo. Season.
Yeah. Like, they learned that was a mistake.
Yep.
And the fans said, you know, very loudly, no. And then they fixed it. But I think when you get into something like The Walking Dead, there's two things at play. You have the guy who did the comic, and then you have the person doing the TV show, and you have them talking about what this is a little bit like Game of Thrones as well. What liberties can we take? They're making a lot of the same mistakes in the comic, I'm told. So obviously this show was going to probably do some of the same things. On the other hand, I think when you don't learn, like, that's one of the most maddening things about Walking Dead. It's like, really? Do you guys really want to trust this group that hasn't gone well, like, the last three or four times you did it? And of course, now we know that if they get in with Negan, this character, that it's going to go really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like they're walking us towards it. Well, it's already happened in the comic book, so it's going to happen on TV. So they didn't learn their lesson on that. And part of it's they're not learning it in the comics. But here's the other part about not learning from mistakes. If you continue to get 16 to 20 million people every week, then if you're the showrunner and the writer, you're like, you know what? I don't think they really care if we're not learning. they're still tuning in. I think if they all of a sudden 12 million, if they dropped 8 million people over the span of 2 weeks, they might get the message. But really, they have been learning no lessons by people not tuning in. People are still tuning in, including me, crazily enough.
Let's go to Art. Art is in the 425.
All right.
So that's, again, Seattle suburbs.
Oh, it's not proper, though. It's
not proper. The suburbs. Yeah, I think we've heard from Art before. So regarding the perfect TV series discussion, Fargo, structured as a series of independently viewable seasons and making the perfect season, is admittedly not the same challenge as making the perfect multi-season show. In my opinion, however, season 2 of Fargo is one of the more perfect seasons of TV you will ever see and should at least be part of the discussion.
Oh, I agree. It's 1 and 2. I don't, you know, those were my 2015 and 2016 number one ranked shows.
So that might be a perfect TV show so far.
It is. I actually think that is. And the level of them, you know, the level of the risk taking that they're doing in fact, I pointed this out in my last class. Like, you don't get to be great by, like, doing something slightly different than everybody else. You have to be ambitious and take chances and put risk in there and then have that risk pay off. And then you get to be known for that. And I would say, if I had to look back at both of those seasons, there might have been one or two things where I was like, okay, that was a little convenient, but great. I don't think there's a misstep in either one. I think they're amazing. I don't want to give any spoilers away from anybody who hasn't seen either episode, either season. But in season one, for those of you who have seen it, the one thing that kind of sticks out involves fish. So,
all right,
on the road. And if that troubled you, then maybe, I mean, there was a reason for it, but some people might have thought that was a stretch. But I don't think there was a misstep in either one of those two seasons.
Art also defended me about the liking that episode of The X-Files, but that's fine. His point is basically it also included some tastefully seductive shots of Gillian Anderson. Dude, what more do you want? Is basically Art's argument there. Thanks, yeah. Art. Thanks for the help.
And Art, can I back you up on that? Last night, as I went through multiple episodes of Elementary, I was like, I am never going to get tired of looking at Lucy Liu. Sorry, I'm just not.
Part of the appeal of entertainment sometimes.
Yeah.
You find attractive actors or actresses, and that's part of the fun. Have your TV boyfriends or TV girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
We all have those, I think. Here's one. This is from Joel in the unknown area code.
Oh, Joel.
Come on, Joel. Get it together.
Disappointing.
On episode 70. This is another one. You were talking about the limited pool. This is from me. This is a letter from me. You're talking about the limited pool of qualified showrunners. I'll be fast. For the new Star Trek series, and you mentioned Ron Moore was out because he burned all his bridges on Battlestar Galactica. What do you mean by that? The short version is, whenever people asked Ron Moore about Battlestar Galactica, one of the things he said was, he was on Deep Space Nine, and when he transferred over to Star Trek Voyager, it didn't go well, and he quit. And one of the things he said when interviewed about BSG was, on BSG, all of the tech breaks and the ships fall apart and everybody's at each other's throats and they're trying to survive in a very difficult situation. And he said on several occasions, this is all the stuff he wanted to do on Star Trek and they wouldn't let him. So it seemed to me like he was kind of burning some bridges. I don't know if any of the people doing Star Trek now even care about that.
They care.
But somebody probably does somewhere. And he's busy. He's got other shows, including Outlander. So
a little show called Outlander.
Yeah, which is kind of a hit. So he doesn't need to come back. But one day, if Ron Moore were to write Star Trek again, I think that would be fine because he was a really good Star Trek writer. And then he made some other good shows. So, you know, he's qualified. I wonder if there's some bad feelings there because he did sort of end by critiquing Star Trek, which, you know, heresy.
Oh,
anyway, that's some more nerd knowledge. And let's move on to Blake in the 810 north of Detroit. Helpfully, Blake has located himself, so I didn't
like
have
that
to look it up on the internet.
Uh-huh. That was good.
Blake says, thank you for making me watch Jane the Virgin. I wouldn't have otherwise done that. They almost lost me when in one of the first episodes, Jane is talking on her iPhone and it didn't go black when she put it up to her ear like it should have. We know that's not a thing. But I did get past this atrocity, he says. My 12-year-old daughter and I watched Supergirl together. This show is not great, but it's something we can watch together and pick apart. We were recently scrolling through the list of the recorded shows when she questioned why there wasn't a new Supergirl. I told her there wasn't a new episode tonight. She said, well, does it come out on any other days? It made me laugh. She has never known anything other than an on-demand world. We filled the void with back-to-back-to-back-to-back episodes of Angie Tribeca that we recorded on that first weekend that it dropped worldwide. So that's a nice little story. My kids don't understand like shows coming out either. It's just...
Oh my God, that is great. Yeah, like what?
Yeah, what do you
Why
mean?
Why can't I have it when I want it right
There's
now?
There's no more episodes of that. My daughter had just had that with The Flash, where she binged season one on Netflix, and then she said, well, you know, we're in season two now. Where's season two? And I said, it's only the last five episodes are on Hulu. And she's like, why not the whole season? I said, because it's Hulu. I don't have a good answer.
It is maddening that whole why can't I have them all in order?
Yeah.
I'm paying for cable,
so literally I could have recorded every episode of The Flash.
Yeah.
And so she should have access to it. But Hulu only has the last five episodes. Literally no one has it for digital on demand other than the last five episodes of any of these in-season shows. And if I'm paying for like digital TV services and cable, should there not be some way for me to watch the back episodes of the current season somewhere, given that I'm paying for your channels. And yet, there is none.
It is maddening.
It is. So I think
it's
the kids
one of
are
the
right.
Glitches. Yeah,
I think the kids are not wrong. The kids are right.
Mm-hmm. And the kids are also all right.
And they are all right. Thank you. Mm. I would expect no less of you. One last letter. This is from Jason, not me. Wouldn't that be something?
I don't know why that's funny, but I'm like, you know what? We only had four letters. Can you just type one out
right
now?
I wrote a letter for you. Know, this is Jason in the 254. I'm Jason the 415, Northern Division. But Jason, this is 254, Texas.
Okay.
And Jason says, what is the deal with Horace and Pete? And is it true that the only way to watch BitTorrent aside is to pay $5 per episode? Mm-hmm. That's not true. It's cheaper than that. I think the first episode was $5, and then he did one for $2 and another one for $3. I think they're all $3 an episode now. But you know, that's that much I know. But what's the deal?
The deal is it came out of nowhere. It was a surprise. No one knew about it beforehand, and I haven't watched it yet, but it's great apparently from other everybody else.
I haven't watched it either. I bought the first episode, but I haven't. John Landgraf, the programmer, mm-hmm. The CEO of FX, in the Hollywood Reporter, did an interview where he said that he did know about it, that Louis C.K. gave him the heads mm-hmm. up that he was doing it, and he basically said, "Can we help? Can we produce it? Can we do this?" And he was like, "Nope, I want to spend my own money. I want to do this myself." It's sort of like, I'm now capable of like making a TV show like completely myself, as opposed to Louis, which he makes himself, like literally, writes, directs, edits some of them. But he's got the money financing it from FX. Mm-hmm. This, he like literally, I just don't want anybody involved who isn't me. Okay. We could do that. You got the money. And so he did.
Yeah, and you know, when he does Louis for FX, it gets run on FX rather than on Louis' website. So right. it's really amazing. I mean, there's so much that's amazing to it as far as the ingenuity and the entrepreneurial aspect of it, and just the genius that he possesses. Outside of whether qualitatively it works, it's impressive.
And if you're on his mailing list, the letters he sends out are amazing. His last email was basically like, "I'm sorry I'm bugging you every week, but I'm spending a lot of time working on this thing, and we'll be done pretty soon, and then you won't hear about it anymore. But you know, maybe just unsubscribe for a little while, and then come back later, and I won't talk about it anymore because it'll be over." But but he, you know, it's very clearly just Louis C.K. sitting on his laptop writing an email and then pressing send. It's kind of adorable, actually.
It's kind of amazing, right? I mean, it's impressive all the way around. And what, like, I think they've just changed the Emmy nominations, things have changed around. There's going to be online content, so he's going to be eligible for an Emmy that way.
It's very interesting. Well, I mean, is there any difference between putting a show on louisck.com and putting it on Amazon? Really?
I know there's not, but everybody wants there to, who's in the content business, wants you to think there's a huge difference.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's it.
But that's the deal. He just decided to make a TV show, and the only way legally so far that you can buy it is to just pay him money, directly into his pocket.
I will get there. I will get to the point where I'll do that, but I know what's going to be around and I can get to it. Yeah. It's like any other streaming site. I'll get to it eventually. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
But I do want to, I hope I can make you laugh when I tell you this. Before we actually get to the Columbo moment, I have a Columbo moment.
Oh, I was about to sign off.
Yeah. But I knew that if you did and I said, wait, I got one more thing, then it would just be, I would be repeating myself, and I wanted to be original.
Oh, okay. So you pre-Columbo'd me this time.
I pre-Columbo'd you.
All right. What's your thing? Before I read the numbers.
Because I have a question.
Hey, Tim. I'm about to read the numbers and tell people how they can reach us. But before I do that, is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners? How about that?
Every week.
How was that?
Every week, they will be suspicious of who has what piece of thing that they just remembered.
It's like an arms race that you and I are going to go through.
Next week, you're going to say, you know what? As a matter of fact, I did write a letter 5 seconds ago, while you were talking about something else, now, I actually penned a letter.
I'm going to ask you if you have anything. You're going to say no. I'm going to read the numbers, and you're going to say, oh, before we go, I do have
just
something.
Just one more thing.
I do have something. I just remembered. Yeah.
Yes. So, Columbo.
So, what do you have?
I want to get your take on the news out. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Right? Yes. I want to get your take because this is we tap into you as your the nerdy sci-fi slash the whole world there thing you've got. I want to get your take on Starz announcing that Ian McShane is going to be Mr. Wednesday in American Gods from Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, Ian McShane, he's got a new house to build or something because he's not only on Game of Thrones this season as a new character, but he's going to be Mr. Wednesday on American Gods. So American Gods, Neil Gaiman wrote a book called American Gods that's a great book and then has written some other stuff in that universe too that I imagine they're going to kind of plumb for material for this. It's a really cool idea. It's modern day America, but there are and it's kind of an immigrant story. The people who immigrated to America didn't just bring themselves with them. They brought their various religions and gods with them, and like the gods they believed in came along with them to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And so they're also immigrants in this country. And so Ian McShane is going to play Mr. Wednesday, who is basically Odin from Norse mythology. And it's all the mythologies are mixed up together, which is one of the cool things about American Gods. The sequel to American Gods, or the next novel in this world, is Anansi Boys, which is about Anansi the spider, which is from Ghana and I think maybe some other parts of that part of Africa. And so it's not just like Norse mythology, it's not just African mythology, it's all the mythologies. So Ian McShane's going to be Mr. Wednesday. It's a great part in the book anyway. He seems like just the right kind of guy for that kind of a character who has got, who's kind of tough. But there's more to him than meets the eye initially. So I think it's a great bit of casting and I'm looking forward to that show. That's interesting because it's Brian Fuller.
Again, right.
But yeah. Right. He's doing that and it's for HBO, right? So
no, it's for Starz.
Or for Starz. Right. Mm-hmm. Starz. Sort of
Home
trying
of
to
Outlander.
Be. It feels, Home of Outlander. Exactly right. It feels like an HBO show. It's kind of interesting that it's on Starz, but I'm sure that's what they intend is for it to be, you know, kind of have that same kind of feel. So yeah, I think, hey, more Ian McShane is good, right? I mean, he's been good in like even on like Kings, which lasted half a season. He was great on
that.
He
was great
in
that.
Like,
yeah.
He's great. Yeah. So
he's super amazing and. But I thought you would probably have that reaction, but since you didn't mention it, I had heard everybody talking about American Gods, like it's still so far from being a thing yet.
I know.
But moment it was announced, I'm a huge fan of Ian McShane, so that was good. And I was like, okay, what is this thing again? Yeah. And then all I saw was like Neil Gaiman says he's the perfect choice, and then Brian Fuller freaks out and says he can't believe they got him. So I was like, I bet you Jason's pretty excited about this.
That was the big. There was that casting news, and then on the movie front, they cast Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey in the Dark Tower movie. Which that's we like those, you know, we like those guys. Those are guys who've been in interesting TV shows who are going to be in that movie. But yeah, the Ian McShane news. I think that's really good. Thank you for asking. I'm looking forward to that show increasingly now. That's a really good book. I like that book a lot, and it's such a rich kind of storyline that I think that's going to be. I can picture Ian McShane as that character now too. So that should be a lot of fun.
Well, my work here is done. Yeah. You may read the numbers.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Are you sure? Nothing more? All right, here's how you can reach us. You can send us a tweet at TVTM. You can email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. We get those letters. I get those letters, and I carefully read them moments before we start, and I don't even sometimes carefully read them. I paste them into a text file moments before we start. You can also post on our Facebook page. We are at facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And if you'd like to talk about the show, you can do it on the TV Talk Machine page. And we also started, there's an Incomparable page now. It's called the Incomparable Zeppelin Hangar. And basically, you ask to be, it's a private group. So the way that works is spammers don't come in because spammers are bad. But you can ask to join. And then there's just a whole bunch of people there who listen to all of these kind of podcasts who are talking about stuff. So you're welcome to join that too. But you can definitely send your letters for the show to TV Talk Machine on Facebook, or tweet at us, or email us. And you can always email or tweet at us separately. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter, and I am Jay Snell on Twitter. And the show is, as I said, TVTM, a great Twitter handle, if ever there was one.
If ever there was one, yes. And you, sir, are an American god.
Anything more you want to say before we go?
I'm good.
All right. See everybody next week.